I'd like to introduce our first speaker as Phil Volker, and he's going to be talking about the latest La Nina and letting us know, if you couldn't tell outside, that winter is coming. So Phil has been keenly interested in weather ever since he and his family witnessed firsthand the fury of the 1962 Columbus Day storm from their home in Vancouver, Washington. Phil has a degree in atmospheric sciences from Oregon State University and served 14 years as a senior meteorologist at COINTV. He brings a scientist's eye to the formidable task of forecasting weather, as we all know can be interesting, in the Pacific Northwest and the Western United States. Phil is the president and senior meteorologist of ERF Company. Please help me welcome Phil.
Thank you very much, yeah. All right, good morning, everybody. I wanted to thank the Oregon Grass Seed Growers Association for inviting me here today, and I can tell you that I left Portland early to avoid the traffic. They can't drive in Portland, so I left really early to get down here. They can't vote in Portland either, but well, that's another topic for another day, right? Hey, I just wanted to mention, it's been a while since I've addressed your group, so, and some of you might be clients, but if I don't recognize you, forgive me, I don't recognize the guy in the mirror that I see every morning either. So it's not, there's no offense there. It just happens, right? This is my 40th year, if you can believe that. And I find that to be somewhat remarkable that the time has gone by fast. Now, of course, when I say it's my 40th year of being a weather consultant, that means I'm 40 years older than I was when I started. That's kind of a negative, but I'm still hanging in there, and I still love what I do every single day, you guys. I get up at 2 o'clock in the morning. That's no kidding. I have clients all over the country that I have to feed information to. I write 146 forecasts from southern BC all the way down to southern California and Arizona, all the way over to Houston and Atlanta and Pittsburgh. We reach 350,000 people every day. So not just you guys, but I reach people in all walks of life. You would be amazed at the diversity of clients that I work with. I'm even amazed at some of the clients that we have and we've had for 40 years. I still have my first two clients that I started with, which was the Eugene Water and Electric Board and the City of Portland. I still work for them 40 years later, which I say very proudly. They're good clients. They've been fun to work with. I was telling Doug earlier that one of my contacts with the Eugene Water and Electric Board, I never met him for 15 years. We worked on the phone together, but I never sat down with him. I work with people all over the country that I've never met. We talk on the phone. Now with FaceTime, we can actually talk back and forth to one another, and we can actually see what we look like. But for many clients, I have never met them in 15, 20 years. But some of the clients that we work with now around the country, you would be amazed. And I'll give you a little example before I start on my my weather spiel here. 4 years ago, I got a call from a production company in Los Angeles. And they were filming a movie up here called The Hunger Games. And some of you may or may not have heard of The Hunger Games, but they filmed part of that movie up here, especially the last edition, The Mockingjay Part 2. And this girl called me up and said, hey, you know, I need your help. We want to do some shooting in the Pacific Northwest in November and December. We need 2 weeks of dry weather and sunshine. And of course, you know, my first reaction was exactly that. I laughed. I said, well, we'll do our best, but no guarantees. Well, 4 days later, I'm looking at the computer models, and they're showing this huge ridge and all, and I thought, you know, maybe we can do this. So I called her back, and I said, look, I think we've got a window for you. And she says, here's the deal. I need 72 hours, 100% guarantee. We got to fly a $4 million Panaflex camera up and strap it to the bottom of a Jet Ranger, because that's going to be our bed. We're flying around to different locations here in the Pacific Northwest. So I said, look, I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb. You got your window. Bring it up. So they got here, and we had a 10-day window for them. Beautiful weather. And shockingly enough, you guys, I don't know, Hunger Games, does that ring a bell for any of you? Have you, any of you seen the Hunger Games? Just let me know so I'm not going off on a limb here. Well, the episode 4, the opening shot, there are some planes transporting whatever to wherever. And that opening shot was actually filmed out of Philomath, Burnt Woods. And there were no photo credits, and that is a secret that nobody knows about. Later in the movie, there's a shot of Grand Coulee Dam, but behind Grand Coulee Dam is this huge city. Now, if you don't know that that was Grand Coulee Dam, you would think it's some other dam around the country, around the world, but it's actually Grand Coulee Dam. The last shot, one of the last shots, is in the gorge from Cape Horn looking towards Beacon Rock. And again, if you look at that, you can see it very clearly. Those three shots never got photo credits. They were all shot in a two-day span in late November of 13 and early December of 13. It was very cold during that stretch. The helicopter, because of the size of the Jet Ranger, they couldn't have the doors on the helicopter. It was 10 below in the air. And there was the director, the executive producer, the production manager, and a pilot. And they flew nonstop for 2 days. They flew the valley, they flew the gorge, they flew around Mount Hood, they flew the basin. They never got above zero in the 2 days that they shot. Pretty remarkable. Well, since then, I've now done 6 movies with them. The most recent was shot this summer in Atlanta. And you will laugh at the movie, because I still laugh. It's called Fathom. It's the remake of the Godzilla Mothra series. They shot for 4 months in Atlanta, but the real interesting story is that they shot in Mexico City. They left Mexico City 2 days before the earthquake. They shot in southern Mexico. They finished their shooting down there 2 days before the earthquake hit. They shot in southern Mexico 2 days before the hurricane hit. They were up on Mount, and forgive me for not pronouncing this right, but Mount Popo, which is the big volcano southeast of Mexico City, they were on there 3 days before it erupted. And then they were in Puerto Vallarta with a hurricane off the coast. They were in Atlanta when Irma went through and took them out for 3 days. They had to shut down their operation. And then they missed, was it Irma? Marie, off of Cape Cod. They shot the last 4 days of the movie at Fenway Park in Boston, and they were on the north side of that hurricane. I got to be a part of this whole series of events for them, and I'm on edge because I know if they are delayed at all, then they're going to face the hurricanes. They're going to face the adverse weather. And on top of that, they shot in Chile in between two major storms down there. So this movie, I can't wait for it to come out because of all the places they were. They had a green wall that was 2 stories high that they had to take with them and set up, obviously, for Godzilla. So anyway, a little bit of a sidebar there about some of the work that we've done. This is my 40th year, which I think is remarkable. During that time frame, I've seen some wonderful events that are really amazing, right here in our own backyard and elsewhere in the country. I've taken it a minute with my speaking engagements this fall to tell people or ask people or mention to people, I hope that during some of these events, whether it's snow or ice or wind or even a tornado, that you take a minute to look at what's going on around you, because some of this stuff is pretty fascinating, especially from my perspective as a meteorologist. When I'm looking at the computer models, and they're going out 2 weeks, and we're seeing some of this stuff forming and coming at us that's not even on planet Earth yet. It hasn't even formed, and yet we're seeing it computer-wise, and we're watching it unfold and come at us. And I'm really speaking of that January 10th and 11th event that we had earlier in the year. That was a phenomenal event, only because the computer models picked up on that 10 days in advance. Now, some of you probably don't believe that or understand that, but 10 days in advance, they showed that event hitting us. And it looked like we were going to get 10, 12 inches of snow out of that. Portland ended up anywhere from 8 to 16 inches from that event. And that was very well documented on the 1st and 2nd of January. So I hope that, and you guys are all in agriculture and growers, and you're out there with the weather every day, but I still hope you take a minute at times to marvel at the beauty of what Mother Nature delivers, especially the snow events that we've had here over the past year. I put my phone number up on the screen there, the 286 number, because I promised Bill that I wouldn't go long, and if I run out of time and you have questions, there's the invitation. That phone number goes directly to my desk, So if you have a question after I finish today, I hope you'll feel free to give me a call and we can chit chat. All right, this is kind of a new thing for me. Usually I have my overhead projector, and it's the old one. It's probably older than many of you. So we're using some new technology, so I hope this works. Maybe it's bigger on the other screens here than on mine. Okay, this is my forecast that I write every day. This is the one I wrote this morning. I finished this one probably around 3:15, 3:20 this morning. So I've been up for a while. You guys think you all get up early, right? Right? Yeah, but I bet you don't get up at 2, right? It's pretty amazing because during significant snow and ice, I have school districts that I talk to, and I get them out of bed at 2:30, 3 o'clock to say, hey, you need to get up and drive your roads. So I'm kind of the canary in the coal mine most of the time. Anyway, this is the forecast that I wrote today, and the significant thing I'm going to talk about here is as you look down days 1, 2, 3, 4, and then 5, 6, 7, 8, all the way to the bottom, the weather pattern right now is going to dry out. We've been fairly wet for the past, 3 months, really, and we're going to dry out here for a couple of weeks. It may last 10 days, 12 days, and then we're going to see a shift in the second half of December. We all know that even with a dry spell, things can turn around in a hurry. And it's not unusual, you guys, to have the media say, oh, we're going into a drought, and then the next thing you know, 4 days later, we're talking flood. So this is one of those events that I think we're going to see a big change come up the second half of the month. Anyway, the big issue for you guys here in the valley is the fog. Portland will have east winds, which will help get rid of the fog, but in the Willamette Valley, the fog is going to be a real pain in the butt over the next, 10 days for sure, and maybe even a little bit longer. So for the past 40-plus years, you guys, I have written long-range weather forecasts. I started actually when I was at Oregon State. One of the projects when I was an undergraduate, and part of my own learning process, was to look at the weather pattern in the fall and to see how it evolved over the winter. So a lot of the tools and techniques that I developed 40 plus years ago, I still use today. It's pretty basic, pretty simple stuff, but it works. The weather pattern tells us a lot in the fall about what's going to happen in the winter. And if you follow it, you can do a pretty good job with long-range forecasts. I write an overview of the whole six-month period. I talk about how the pattern's going to ebb and flow. Then I break it down month to month, and I break it down month to month for Washington, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, Oregon, Utah, California, Arizona. And that's an arduous process. It takes me a week to write it. So I hope at the end of the week that I've written it that things don't change, right? Because then I've got to start over again. I've been lucky over the years I haven't had to do that. So what I did for November and December, this past month and the current month, is that I had given a range of 110% up to 170%+, and that's just for Oregon. Other areas I went 250% of normal for precip. And I just looked at the verification. It's been very wet for northern Oregon, Washington, Idaho, BC, Montana, and southern Oregon and southern Idaho have not been as wet. California also not as wet, but I'd gone fairly dry for those areas anyway. But we're on track here. So even with dry weather coming up here the next 10 days or even 2 weeks, we're still in pretty good shape. Snowpack in the upper Columbia is also very good. The snowpack in Oregon is not as good as I would like for it to be, but I think that'll change here coming up. Now, this big ridge that we're going to have over us, which is right over the West Coast right now, starting to form, it's going to push everything up into Alaska, and then the cold air is going to go down and affect Bill. And so you're going to have some interesting weather coming up. But for us, we have this big ridge. And the odd thing here, you guys, is it extends all the way up the West Coast into BC. I think that the models are overreacting to this. But even if we get a 10-day break, I don't think that's going to be a deal killer. Because I think we're going to see quite a change here coming up. And the reason I think we're going to see that, I want to keep track of my time, Bill, here, so I want to, don't want to tighten things up here. I think eventually the ridge will peel off and move up over BC, maybe even southeast Alaska, and then the jet stream will undercut this. So here's the challenge coming up. If we get cold air coming down, northeasterly flow, and you have the mixing zone right over the top of us, it looks to me that we could be on the borderline for an Arctic outbreak the second half of the month. The models have been hinting at that. And if we do see that and the moisture coming up from the southwest, then we have a repeat of what we saw last year. It may be 2 weeks later, but the second half of December looks fairly interesting. I think we'll be wet. In fact, in some cases, dramatically wet. But the wild card is that cold air. Now, right now, in the next 2 weeks, the Columbia Basin is going to chill down dramatically. They'll be down in the teens and 20s. And that's the key ingredient for us to have the snow and ice. Remember last year, it was bitter cold in the basin. And it looks like it's going to turn cold again in the next couple of weeks. And as you all know, there's only a couple ways for that cold air to go. And that's out over the, or through the Columbia River Gorge and down the Fraser Valley. So if you have moisture coming up from the southwest and you have the cold air in place, then all of a sudden we're faced with the freezing rain or the snow or a combination of both. So that's something to think about down the road here the second half of December. Now, I had hoped, quite honestly, that would hold off until after the first of the year. I hate snow and ice events that affect the holidays, because frankly, we all like to travel and be with family and friends, and snow and ice doesn't help us do that very well, especially if you live in Portland. You guys down here get around pretty good, but Portland, with just a half an inch of snow, they you know, shutting down schools because people can't drive, right? Yeah, I stay home because of that, and I'm a good driver in snow, but there are just so many crazies out there. I met with TriMet last week, and we were laughing about, and truly laughing about, the events of last December and January. You know, what they go through, they chain the fleet, and it takes them 8-9 hours to chain 550 buses. And they send them out in the morning, and then they end up in gridlock. So they just sit there. There's nothing they can do, especially when those snow and ice events come in the afternoon, and they're completely shut down. So this cold air in the basin, you guys can follow this very, very easily yourself. The colder Pendleton, Pasco, and Spokane are, or Boise, the colder their temperatures, the greater the likelihood is that we get snow and ice here. That's one of the key indicators. Without that basin cold, we can still have snow, but we don't get the big snow events. When I've been working with the city now for 40 years, and one of the documents that they shared with me many years ago was the snow and ice accumulations in downtown Portland going back to 1860. And you look at these events, and there'll be a couple years in a row where they've got 4 feet in downtown Portland, and then there'll be a stretch of 10 years where they have nothing. And then there's these big events that show up in the 30s and the 40s and all. On every single one of those events, I was able to go back and look at how much cold air pooled in the basin, and 98% of the time, they had huge amounts of cold air in the basin. When they didn't have the cold air in the basin, the snow accumulations in downtown Portland were pretty meager. So for all of you, that's a key indicator, how cold the basin is. Right now, my forecast for Spokane and Pasco, low 30s for highs, teens to low 20s for lows. And if we do get that Arctic pushed, they'll be 15 to 20 degrees colder than that. So if they're pushing zero for a high temperature and they're 10 below, 15 below for a low temperature, Katie, bar the door, we'll have an event here. And that's almost a guarantee. Now, I'm not going to say it's a guarantee that we're going to have it, because it all depends on that cold air and how the storms come in. If the storms come in to the north of us, then we generate the southerly winds, and that scours out the cold air fairly quickly. But as you well know, if they come into the south of us, southern Oregon, or even right over the top of us, then that's a problem for not only Portland, but it's a problem for Salem and Eugene and everybody, and certainly into the Columbia Basin and eastern Oregon. Okay. For January and February, I kept us fairly wet, 95 to all the way up to 150% of normal, but I went below normal for temps. I think the cold air will set up over the top of us, the jet will sweep south into Northern California, and we'll be on the cold side of this pattern. And with that, we have higher probability of snow and ice, whether it's in the hills or on the valley floor. I went probably 2.5 to 3 degrees below normal for high and low temperatures, and went fairly consistent on the precip. Now, if we were in Washington or Idaho or BC, I would have dropped off, or I did drop off the precip amounts, but I didn't go dry. So that's January and February. I went 1 to 5 snow and ice events for Oregon and Washington on the west side of the Cascades, 1 to 5. 3 to 5 of those could be moderate, and it all depends on just that cold air setting up in the basin. And let's see, March and April. Last year, we stayed pretty cool and wet into May. Usually when we set up in these La Nina events, they go about 8 months before they shift out. And so I actually took us right back up here to this 120 to 170% of normal. And then I kept our temperatures normal going through March and April. March might be a little bit cooler than normal, and April normal. But the jet stream comes back up over the top of us. We still have plenty of cold air feeding us and keeping us pretty active weather-wise. And I think even going into May, we're going to stay pretty wet, favorably wet. So I think over the six-month period, we're well above normal. There are some locations in California, Idaho, that I went 300, 400% of normal, just because we saw it last year, and I think we'll see it again this year. But there's something to think about, you guys. These La Nina events, they don't ever repeat themselves perfectly. They're all a little bit different because the weather pattern is different year in and year out. Sometimes these events get going early, and so we get the snow and ice early like we had last year. Sometimes they form a little bit later, and they come on a little bit later. The later they start, usually the later they finish. That sometimes is not good. If you look at what happened this past year, I had apple growers in the Columbia Basin first week of November that still had Fujis on their trees. Fujis and 19-degree temperatures don't mix well. And they told me that not only did they have a late start with bud set and everything in the spring, but they got hammered at the end because things changed. I personally thought it was a short summer because we had rain all the way into middle of June, and we started with the rain the middle of September. The media will tell you, oh, we had this long, hot summer because we had a forest fire in the gorge. Well, that's not quite true. We had a dry 90-day period, and that's all it took to get things dried out and cause some fires. But if that fire hadn't happened in the gorge and we didn't have all the darn smoke, people wouldn't have thought much about our summer. But they made it sound like our summer was long, hot, and dry, and I think for most people, it wasn't, especially for my ag people. They thought it was pretty short. My grape people thought it was pretty short. I'll be interested, and maybe you guys can enlighten me on this, how the smoke will affect the grapes. Smoky bouquet? I was down in the Napa Valley right after the fire back in middle of October, and the growers down there, they'd already picked all their grapes. I think 95% were already off the vine in the Napa Valley. So the only problem was just kind of getting crush finished. And they had a few vineyards that were late up in the hills, but they were ahead of the game down there. And nobody was there the 16th, 17th, and 18th of October. And I'm not kidding. We drove around, no traffic. It was like driving down here this morning. Pretty amazing. How am I doing? 4 minutes. Right on. I'll take a question if anybody has any questions. I think it's going to be an interesting winter. We're going to see some twists and turns, just like this little dry spell. But we're just starting. So winter is coming. I hope it's not as bad for some as it was last year. I felt really bad for the people in Ontario and Boise, what they had to endure in terms of cold and snow. But let's be honest, folks. We do have winter here, and we're going to continue to have winters here. I wanted to point one thing out, that July or January 10 and 11 event, followed by the cold behind that. There was a second event that was knocking on our door on the 18th of January. Had that event come in through the Willamette Valley, you would have doubled the snow depths in Portland. And all of a sudden you have people saying, boy, we haven't seen this in 50, 60, 80 years. Count on it, it'll happen in let's see, who's younger here? Some of you young people will see it in your lifetime. I may not in mine, but that event in January was a big one. So, yes, sir. Not at all. I still think that Mom Nature has her hand on the thermostat, and I have not changed it one bit. I think we need to clean up our act and do a better job because of population, not because of anything else. I still think the facts are quite different than what you get from the media. And unfortunately, most people get their climate news from the media, and I'm pretty sure I could probably say they're biased. In many things, right? Right. Well, you know, and what's funny, you guys, is that, you know, you look at them banging on our politicians because of their low approval ratings, but, you know, when you got the media, the lowest of the low, you know? I mean, who the heck are they to say about somebody's approval rating? So I haven't changed a bit. I still believe the same thing. And I tell people, look, there's some great websites out there that you can go to and get both sides of the story. And I encourage people to look. I don't try to change people's mind. I'm an atmospheric scientist. I've been doing this all my life. And there's just facts out there that you're not being told. The University of Washington ran a computer model in 1995 that verifies in 2020, seven models, in fact. They said that we would warm up here in the Pacific Northwest 3.1 degrees on average. We're actually at either staying flat right now, or we're half a degree cooler. That model will be off 3 degrees plus. There are 102 computer models that we look at. All of them have a warm bias in them, all of them, all 102 of them. And you'll never hear that on ABC or NBC or CBS. You might hear, there might be something in the Statesman Journal about that, but you will never see anything in the Oregonian about that, ever. Yeah, that's a great question, thank you. I don't want to get in trouble with Bill. The second half, if you're going south the second half of December, I'd be pretty concerned. Until then, you're pretty good. Although, you know, they're going to get stuck with that Rogue Valley fog and low clouds. You know, so the high of 40 and the low of 28 in Medford for the next 2 weeks. And you probably won't even see any sunshine, if that's what you're worried about. Are you just worried about going over the pass? Yes. In fact, the Oahes right now, they're above normal for precip. They're a little below for snow, but that'll all change. I think the weather pattern will shift south, and we'll see some pretty good storms going into California and the Great Basin and southern Idaho. So I think they'll all come out okay. I'm a little nervous seeing this ridge. I won't deny it, but I think that we'll turn that around. It's better to have it now than in January. Yeah. So that's a great question. All right, I'm going to turn it over to Doug. You guys have a great holiday. I can say Merry Christmas to all of you. So, yeah, right on.